The topic of the lecture will be free derivative methods for unconstrained optimization. The problem I have is always our usual optimization problem, so we want to minimize the function f from Rn to R all over the full space. Okay. Up to now, we've been facing many methods, gradient method, conjugate gradient method, Newton method, just Tuesday, and they all share a common feature. Well, they share many common features, but I'm interested in one in particular. They all require f to be differentiable or continuously differentiable or twice continuously differentiable. And they, in particular, they exploit derivatives. You need to know derivatives. You need to compute them. Okay? In some situations, computing derivatives may be a very difficult task or even an impossible task. I mean the following. All the examples we dealt with are very simple, the functions are simple, and I could compute derivatives by hand. Indeed, when I run computer programs, I gave the program the function, I defined also the gradient and also the Hessian matrix when it was needed, okay, by hand, because the examples were simple. Were polynomial, or we just had an exponential, or a sine, or a cosine, okay? And we could do it by hand. But generally, there are functions which are much more complex, and well, there are ways to compute numerically derivatives. Okay, there are actually two different types of approach. One is based on the definition itself. Let's take, for instance, the partial derivative of f with respect to xi. Okay? We know, by definition, that this is obtained taking the incremental ratio f at xi plus time ei minus f at x divided by t, where ei is the vector whose components are all zero except component I, which is equal to 1. Okay? 0, 0, 1, 0, 0, 0. Okay? This is by definition, so that most simple approach is simply, well, let's compute this incremental ratio for very small values of t. Okay? For t which are closer and closer to zero, when the value gets stable, we approximate the derivative with this value for small t. Numerical problems. Well, as t goes to zero, the numerator goes to zero. The denominator goes to zero as well. Okay? We are dividing two very small numbers, and you can have easily numerical problems. Okay? When you deal with numbers which are very, very close to zero, and moreover, you take their ratio. You can improve this a little bit. There are a bit better formulas. For instance, you can prove that also this incremental ratio. Oh, there's no, sorry, there's no, not t squared, there's 2 here. Okay. You can prove also that the derivative is equal to this limit. This is called standard difference. You compute the function in the point plus t times ei and the function in x minus t times ei. Okay? This gives a bit less problems, but still the problem is there, and there are also formulas for second order derivatives. Okay? All of them are what are called finite differences. For instance, this is the way in which MATLAB, Octave, Scilab, and other programs compute derivatives. Okay? There is also another kind of technique. Which is actually an entire area of research, which is automatic differentiation. Which is based on the following idea. Let's simply decompose the function in simpler terms. Okay? I mean, if your function is the sum of some terms, you can consider them separate. Okay? Each term then might be the composition of a few functions. Okay? For instance, you could have the cosine of, let's say, the exponential of x all squared. Okay? Here we are composing, you have three different elements. You have the exponential function, you have the cosine function, and you have the square. Okay? The idea is to, so when you have x, you compute e at x, then you compute the cosine, and finally, you take the square. Okay? This is the exponential function, this is the cosine function, and this is the function, the square. Okay? I'm speaking clearly about x to be a real number. Okay? Point. You know how to, you know the derivative of this, you know the derivative of this, you know the derivative of the square, which is 2 times the value. And you can use the chain rules to compute the derivative of this function. Okay? The idea of automatic differentiation is to decompose function in simpler ones, and then to apply numerical techniques to each and compose them through chain rules. Okay? This is just for your knowledge. I'm not going in this topic. Okay? If anyone is interested, there are a lot of references. There are books which explain how to do this. So, these are the 2 main techniques. They have their positive and negative sides, but in some cases, computation, let's say my message is the following. Computation of derivatives may be difficult and or computationally expensive. Okay? Then there's another situation in which you cannot use derivatives. Derivatives do not exist. Okay? Function is not differentiable. You cannot apply gradient, conjugate gradient in Newton method. You don't have the derivatives, they do not appear. Okay? So if the function is non-differentiable, another term which is often used is non-smooth. Okay? Smooth in Italian can be translated in liscia. Okay? Liscio. Non-smooth means non-liscia. Okay? This is smooth. This is not. And there's also another situation. For instance, you don't have a formula for your function. Okay? Maybe first example, you have a black box. You give the point, and the black box gives you the value of the function. And you don't know what happens in the box. Okay? There's no way you can compute the derivatives. You don't know the function. You just know the value of the function at given points. Or think, for instance, the black box is not actually a black box, but it's an algorithm. Okay? You have an input, you have an algorithm that does a lot of things, and then you have the value of the function. But you don't have an explicit formula for the function. Okay? It may be a complex algorithm. How can you compute the derivatives here? Okay? Maybe in the end the function is also a good function. It's smooth, it's differentiable, it's very good, but you don't know. Okay? Because you don't have a formula. So there are at least so three reasons to try to develop methods which do not use derivatives. Computation of derivatives is computationally expensive. I don't know the formula for the function. I just have the value. I can just get the value of the function. Derivatives do not exist. So this gives rise to an area, which is derivatives free method. Derivative free methods have been translated in liberi da derivare. Okay? Methods which do not exploit derivatives at all. The only thing you are allowed to use are the values of the function at points. Okay? There's a huge number of methods. In my room I have a 300 pages book just on this type of methods, okay? And as I told you last time, most of these methods exploit just ideas, but you apply them on a huge, you make a lot of tests on benchmark and see how they behave, but you have no guarantee they always work, okay? I will show just one method, probably the most simple of all, the most intuitive of all these methods, for which actually we could also prove some result, some convergence result. Okay? The idea is extremely simple. How can you check if a point is a minimum point or not? Okay? Well, I'm just allowed to compute values of the function. I compute the value of the function at nearby points, at points which are close to this one. Okay. For instance, I compute the value of the function here, at this point. I compute the value of the function here, 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 here. I could also compute it here, 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 and so on. Well, if I find a point at which the function has a smaller value, okay, I erase the point and I consider as my new point the one at which the function has a better value. Okay? And I repeat to the argument. I mean, the idea is just this. Compute the function at nearby points, and then move in one of these points if the value is better. To do this, generally you use a structure. For instance, in R2, the most natural structure is to consider this point, this point, this point, and this point. Okay, in R2. These four points, you move along coordinates. If you move from this point, the first coordinate, no, the second coordinate remains fixed, and the first changes. And vice versa here. Okay? And you test the function in these four points. If I find one point at which the value is better, for instance this one, I repeat, I move in this new point, and I repeat. And I repeat the technique with the same pattern. Okay? If I don't, let's suppose now you move here, and the value at these three points is not better. I'm not considering this one, because of course if I move the value here is worse. Okay? Now I suppose the value at this point is not better than the value here. What do I do? Well, this is a length. Let's say for instance unitary length. Okay? Well, this could be a minimum or not. Maybe this length is too big to check if this is a minimum point. So I can try at least to check if it is a local minimum point, okay? Maybe it is a local minimum point or not, and you can check it with a smaller radius. So you, for instance, take a half of this, and you just shrink your pattern of points. Okay? So the idea is simply this. You move to neighboring points according to some structure. This is generally called comma. Okay? If you find a better point, you move. If you don't, you decrease, let's say for instance by a half, the radius of the comma. Is it clear? I mean, the idea is very simple. What we really need now is a structure for this, to make this formal. Now, I also tell you that this method is known as the complex method, or also as the coordinate search. Ricerca per coordinate. Okay? Just taking into account this simple case. You keep fixed all the values of a component except one, okay? And you try to move.
And you can find both names, and they are also called in part of the family of methods called direct search.
Okay? There are other methods which exploit this basic idea in different ways. Okay? Okay, let's make this a little bit formal. So let's consider Rn, and let's consider the canonic basis E1, E2, En. Okay, the so-called canonical basis. So, the vectors whose ith component is 1 and all others are 0, okay? In R2, the
Isaiah 1 and 2. The compass I draw you is made by four points. Then and there. Okay.
So let's consider this set, which is made by
E1,
EN, and their opposites. Okay?
So let me call them D1, DN, DN plus 1, D2N, and let's say that DI is EI if I is less or equal than N, and EN minus I if I is greater than N. Okay?
So that this one is
E1, E2, EN, and this is, minus. Minus E1, minus E2, minus EN.
Okay. I have a remark, which is, the actual and true starting point for this.
Take any vector in R.
Okay? I claim that
any vector in R is a linear combination of elements capital D with non-negative coefficients.
Okay? You see it clearly here.
This point is linear combination of E1 and E2 with positive coefficients. Okay? The coordinates of this vector are positive. This point the second component is positive and the first component is negative. So it is a number of times positive number of times this negative vector plus positive number of times this vector. Okay? I can make this formal. Since we have the canonical basis, when you are given a vector in Rn, when you are given the vector V, well, you can always write V as the sum for E equal 1 to N of alpha I E I.
Okay, where alpha I are the coefficients.
Because E1, EN is a basis.
Okay?
Some of these coefficients might be negative.
If they are all positive, I proved it. Okay?
Some of them might be negative. But so if they are negative, I can always move the sign to the vector. Okay. Here I can. This is also equal to.
This where I take the absolute value of the coefficients. Okay. And here I take EI or minus EI according to its sign.
Okay. So I take vector EI. And EI is equal to EI if lambda I is greater or equal than 0. And minus EI if lambda I.
Okay? It's much more complex to say than to get it. Okay? I move the sign away from my coefficient and I move it into the vector. Okay? This is the property we need to make compass methods work. Okay? Every vector in the space has to be a linear combination. A linear combination of elements of the compass, D, with non-negative coefficients. Okay? So I can also formalize the idea of the method. Well, let me repeat the idea. The idea is simply to compute or evaluate f at the point let's say xk is our current vector xk plus t times t k times d I put the index down, it's not... Okay, let me call vector D for all vectors D in the compass. Okay? If I find a point at which the function is better, I move into this point. Otherwise, I replace tk with, let's say, tk half. Okay? So here you have to xk plus 1 is equal to xk plus tkd if this is smaller than the current one. Otherwise, I do not move, I keep staying in the same point, but I diminish the step size, okay? The radius of the compass. I decrease it. Okay? Well, this is almost formal. So let me write it as an algorithm. We choose a starting point, as usual. Okay, so we choose some x0 as a starting point. We also choose an initial step size, and we set the iterate counter at 0. Then we check the value of the function in this point and we compare with the value at xk. So, if there exists a point D, direction D in the compass such that f at xk plus tk times d is less than f at xk, then I move into this viewpoint. And I keep the same radius for the compass. Otherwise, I keep staying in the same font, and I decrease the radius of the compass by, let's say, a factor 2. 2 is not very relevant, okay? Here, instead of 1/2, you can take any number between 0 and 1, okay? I could make this more general and write gamma tk, where gamma is between 0 and 1, okay? But just for fixing ideas, let's say tk half, okay? And then I iterate, so I update the iterate count, and I go back to point 2. Okay. I think you can make an objection to my algorithm. Non terminiamo mai. As it is written, the algorithm never stops. Okay? Because or I'm moving to new points, or I keep decreasing the step size. Okay? But I never ask the algorithm to stop. Okay? So in algorithms we have seen up to now, it was an optimality condition to give us the stopping criterion. Generally it was the gradient is zero. Okay? And then for numerical reasons we generally approximate it, taking like the norm of the gradient is more enough. It's below some threshold. Okay? The norm is equal to the value of the sum. Let's say 10 to the minus 6. Okay. Here we don't have optimality conditions. We don't know even if f is differentiable, so we don't know even if the gradient exists, and then we cannot compute it. It's the only rule here. The function may also be differentiable, but we don't want to compute the derivatives. We cannot check the definition by hand. Okay. Because it's roughly what the algorithm is trying to do with the compass. The only thing is that we can try to imagine the point. Okay, I'm in a point. It's good. I decrease. It's still good. Okay. The radius is very small. And I don't find better points. I could say that the stopping criterion is that the step size goes below some given threshold delta. Okay? When the radius of the compass becomes very small, okay? First relevant remark. This is not related to any optimality conditions, okay? This is not the approximation of an optimality condition. I mean, taking the norm of the gradient to be less or equal than some delta, very small delta, is approximate the optimality condition, which actually reads this is zero, okay? But this is not related to optimality condition at all. And this, as I will show you afterwards, is one of the reasons why the algorithm may behave bad, may behave poorly. Okay. Is it possible that we don't stop all the same because, for instance, we never decrease the step size? Okay. In principle, this is possible. I'll give you just a very simple example in R. The usual take an exponential function like this one. Okay. So in R, the compass is made by 2 points. And here, I get here is a better point. I get here is a better point. I get here is a better point, and so on. Okay. I'm going to minus 15. I could make you more quick example because you could say, okay, but this is example, there is no minimum point. Okay? I could also you make some tricks in modifying this function in such a way that a minimum exists, but I don't find it. Okay? For instance, just this goes down to zero. This goes down to now I have to think it a little bit better. Yes, could be. I mean, the function is done this way, just a little modification. Here it takes value 0, okay? I arrive here, then I consider this point here, okay? It is better, and I keep going this way, okay? I mean, I skipped the best one because it was in between two steps, okay? And then I have no way to recognize this step. But the fact is that, okay, you gave us this rule, but this rule may not work all the same. It works under an assumption, and the assumption is the following. The set of points at which the function is below some given value is compact. Okay? So the sub-level set, for instance, this one, the set of points in Rn such that f at x is less or equal than f at the starting point is compact. Compact, if you remind, means that it is closed and it is bounded, so it is inside a ball of some radius. Okay? And so imagine this, so this, oh, notice this thing. In the way we made it, this method is a weakly descent method, because at each iteration, f at xk plus 1 is less or equal than f at xk. Okay? It's not purely descent method, because they could be equal. Descent method would be without the equal. Okay? But so, if all the sequence I generate lies inside this sublevel set. Okay, suppose it is compact, so let's just say this is a ball. Okay? And just consider, so, and I say, it is not possible that we perform this case for an infinite number of times without performing at least this. Once, okay? Non posso fare sempre questo. And I'll show you why. If I always do this, the step size remains constant, okay? So, the points I can investigate are this, then I have this, then I have this. I'm building a grid. A grid square, made of squares, with fixed size, okay? Quadrati,
di lato prefissato. Ok? How many points can I have inside the book? Ok, le tiri dopo. The number of points inside a compact set, inside a ball, is finite. Okay? Because this ball has a given radius. Okay? All these squares have the same size. Size of the same length. So, just a finite number of points of my grid can be inside the region. Okay? Sooner or later, I will end up in one. At worst, I can visit them all, but sooner or later, I will find one at which this is not possible. Okay? Because in the worst case, I get the one which has the smallest value inside the grid. Okay? Since, remember, this is always true. I cannot loop. Okay. If the step size remains the same, it is actually a descent method. Okay? When I perform this, I'm decreasing the value. So, since the number of points are finite, sooner or later I will decrease the step size. Okay? Just for your knowledge, this is a typical question you could be asked when describing these methods at the exam. Why does the criterion work, the stopping criterion work? And this is the answer. Okay? I have to suppose this to be compact, then I'm sure that sooner or later the step size get divided, and since you divide it by half, after a number of iterations will be below the threshold. Okay? Ogni tanto lo devo dimezzare, quindi prima o poi andrà sotto delta. Okay, I think we can take very very short break. And then I'll show you the conversion result and some examples on the computer.